Hello, I'm Llewellyn King, the host of White House Chronicle, today coming to you from New Orleans, where the Edison Electric Institute is holding its annual convention. We at White House Chronicle pay a lot of attention to electricity because we think energy of all sorts, and electricity in particular, is part of the brief of the presidency, part of the national good. It is a very essential aspect of our infrastructure, which is why we're so glad to be able to bring you from New Orleans these interviews about this vital subject and what's going to happen to your electric bill and what the prospects for the future are as electricity gets greener. Ted Craver is the chairman and chief executive officer of the Edison Company, which is located in Southern California. He also is a leader in this industry and the immediate past president of the Edison Electric Institute. Ted, welcome to the broadcast. We've had people and had them on this program who have said that there is a social consequence to what is happening, that rooftop generation is going to cherry pick the utility customer base. The result is going to be that those who cannot afford to put solar on their roofs and sell the electricity back to the utility if it's in surplus are going to have to pay for the poles and the wires, and it has even been suggested this could be a civil rights issue, but certainly a social justice issue. How will the poor have to pay for everything, and if they do, how will they pay for it?
Well, I think there's some themes there that are in fact important ones, and ones to plan for. But on the broader point of, if someone has rooftop solar, does that mean they're actually disconnecting from the electric system? And on that point, I think it's pretty clear, they are not. So the electrons aren't running from the panel down into the socket and into their coffee maker. The electrons are going back into the grid, and then they're being pulled from the grid to serve homes and businesses. So in an odd way, when you have solar panels on the roof, there are periods of time when you have excess and you're selling it into the grid. There's periods of time when you don't have enough and you're buying from the grid. So you're actually involved in a two-way relationship with the grid. Whereas if you don't have solar, it's a one-way, simply from the grid to the home and business. So I just think it means with the advent of rooftop solar or any on-premise generation, that you're having a more complex relationship between the customer and the grid. The grid is still the network. That's the thing that connects all of the homes and businesses, all of these technologies, all of the potential future technologies. So I don't see it as the utility will be, you know, displaced and made irrelevant. I actually think it needs to change, and that distribution system that connects the homes and businesses needs to become considerably more flexible and more modernized so they can handle even more of these new technologies coming into the system.
Tell me about electrification of transportation.
Yeah.
You're in the part of the world where everybody drives, where the car is king.
I have one myself.
You have an electric vehicle.
I do, all electric.
What do you think this will mean for the utilities? Is this a huge new business opportunity?
I think it can be. Up to this point, I would say it's still trying to gain momentum, and some of that has something to do with the way the market is structured. Some of that has to do with just getting people comfortable with the notion, I can get into an electric car and I'm not going to get stuck somewhere. So that gets back to the charging infrastructure. How ubiquitous is the charger? Are the chargers? But I think it actually has a tremendous opportunity. And you mentioned Elon Musk. They're trying to constantly extend the range of their vehicles.
This is the Tesla.
The Tesla. And reduce the price point of the car so that it's more affordable for a wider number of people.
Do we have to go all the way to the total electric? The hybrid is in fact an electric car with a power plant on board, a gasoline power plant on board. Isn't that perhaps a better way, or is that just a bridging mechanism?
I tend to think it would be more of a bridge, but it's a little hard to predict where customer preferences are going to be. But if you stand back from it and say, one of the reasons for having all electric is that it is better for the environment, whether that's tailpipe emissions or it's in the form of carbon, then the more you can move to all electric, the better. I think the key is, what's the actual use? What I use mine for is I tend to do just local travel. I'm not taking the car on long trips. If I'm going to go on a long trip, I use different transportation. So I think for inside an urban setting where most of your commuting and activity is, you know, well under 40, 50 miles a day, that's where the electric vehicle, all electric, actually makes terrific sense. If you're trying to go across the country, certainly a Tesla is trying to make it that you could go across the country with an all electric. But I think that's where you might get more of a mix between the hybrids and all electrics.
I'm wondering if we might not see portable charging vehicles, sort of emergency vehicles, like a gasoline tanker that you called the AAA if you got flat and it came and gave you a quick boost as a possibility. Using the ideal, not just a drip feed at home, but a full electric charge, how long does it take to charge your vehicle?
So if I use a level 2 charger and I have 85 mile range on my vehicle, if I use a level 2 charger, so 220 volts, it'll take between 4 and 5 hours depending on just how far down I've discharged it. So if it's fully discharged, it'll take closer to 5 hours to recharge it. If you have the level 4, which is the super fast chargers, something like that can be done in really a matter of a half an hour to an hour.
So it is possible AAA might be able to get a system where they could rush out and help the stranded electric driver.
If the vehicle itself is capable of taking the fast charger, the 480,
Southern California, stuck in drought, once the dream place in the world. How is it affecting electric supply?
Well, it's kind of interesting. The California Independent System Operator, so for the grid of California, just came out with their summer readiness projection. And they actually projected that even with the drought, we only had 4% of normal snowpack this year, which really fuels hydroelectric, that with the drought in the peak of summer, they still expect that we would have a 39% planning reserve margin.
So there's no reason to leave California because you think you're going to be out of electricity.
Not for that reason. Definitely not.
Bob Rowe is the President and Chief Executive Officer of Northwestern Energy, headquartered in Montana. Welcome to the broadcast. Big sky country, big ideas.
Big sky country, big ideas, big ambitions. It's an honor to be here speaking with an icon.
No. What is this organization? I'm told that you're the head of this. What is it called?
Sure, the Institute for Energy Innovation I think of it as the light cavalry within the EEI family. It's been an important part of EEI for almost a decade, started with a focus on energy efficiency, continues to have that, but now has moved into really understanding from a very practical sense how utilities are partnering with technology companies to improve service to our customers.
I'm going to throw at you several challenges that utilities have faced and find out whether there are ideas to deal with them. Line losses. They're not huge in this country, but nonetheless, a certain amount of electricity is lost in simply sending it long.
Absolutely.
And we've been looking at cryogenic, which is cold transmission. It hasn't really arrived. We've looked at perfect resistance-free transmission. There have been lots of hopeful experiments. Nothing has happened. There's always resistance in the wire. How do you deal with that one?
Well, at the transmission level, there's actually been an awful lot of technology deployed to improve the stability and the control, essentially the dispatchability of the transmission system. One of the exciting things over the last few years is technologies that are relatively far along in deployment at the transmission level are cost-effectively scalable.
Does any of these stand out as being superconductivity of some kind?
The very practical application at the distribution level is simply optimizing the VAR's performance, so you don't have to send as much electricity down a long distribution line, and as a result can maintain power quality to the end use customer without as much generation at the head end. So that's a technology that, again, as it became more functional, more deployable at small scale, and more cost effective, begins to make sense. I think we have the obligation as stewards of the nation's most essential of all critical infrastructures to be forward-looking, but you want to be, I think, not on the bleeding edge, probably the phrase fast follower, and you want to be mindful of quality, reliability, safety, and affordability. Getting all of those balanced is
my second challenge is storage. How is storage coming, and are you able to improve it? The storage of electricity being almost an oxymoron. You can't store it on a shelf, so to speak.
Sure, and certainly not yet in a cost-effective way. Many companies now are looking at storage. I think the honest answer is, in general deployment, storage is not yet cost-effective. In specific applications, it can make a lot of sense. So, for example, a particular application, particular customer, where there's a very high reliability expectation, storage might well make sense. As part of a microgrid, it might well make sense. At Northwestern, we have a very, very large service territory, much of South Dakota, most of Montana, Yellowstone Park in Wyoming. We're looking at actually storage combined with solar to help us address reliability on long rural radial lines. Don't know whether it's cost effective yet, but that's exactly the kind of thing that we and other companies are trying to find out.
Finally, electric transportation. We've heard from Elon Musk. He talks about it as though it's almost here. It's been a pipe dream for many decades. At one time, there were quite a few electric options. The great shop in London, Harrods, had electric carts delivering, but they were lead-acid batteries, and they were slow, and they finally abandoned them. I think they abandoned them in the 1960s and started in 1924. And then there was a hiatus. And now suddenly we have a surge of interest in pure electric vehicles. Are you excited?
I am very excited. I love the comment I've heard that you might buy an EV to help save the planet. But you drive it because they're awfully fun to drive. And in our part of the world, we see relatively fewer, but we're beginning to see them. Personally, what I'm looking for is something that has all-wheel drive, because of where I live, and something that does have adequate range. But we're beginning to see more and more of them, not just on the coasts, but in the interior as well.
What about induction charging? There is a way of not attaching to the charger, but to drive the vehicle over it. In South Korea...
Isn't that fascinating? Yeah.
In South Korea, the bus stops have this charger, and while they're loading passengers, the bus is charging. That's blow-your-mind technology.
It absolutely is, yes.
Have you worked on that?
We have not, no. No, but it's fun to see the marvelous things that people are creating all around the world, and knowing that just the way information and technology flows, at some point things like that will be coming very near to all of us.
How do you see the electric utility 10 years out?
You know, we have, again, as stewards of this essential infrastructure with very long planning horizons, we need to be making investments now that will continue to provide our customers safe, adequate, reliable service as their expectations change. I like the notion, and we plan at Northwestern Energy around the notion of no barriers and no regrets. So we are investing very aggressively, appropriately, in the underlying technology to serve all of our customers, regardless of what direction specific technologies might take. So a platform that can support multiple different paths.
Is there a website where people can go and see what the Institute for Energy Innovation is working on?
Sure. If you go to the EEI website, you can go from there right to IEI, the Institute. One of the things the Institute has done that's really very rewarding is an annual conference, Powering the People, held at the museum in Washington, D.C. And then following on that, they've put together now a series of books, Innovations Across the Grid. The book you have in front of you is the most recent in that series and follows up from this winter's Innovations Across the Grid, Powering the People conference. And it's a great selection of success stories from companies all across the country.
For young people who are listening and watching, how did you get into this business? What is your discipline?
I am a lawyer, but I'm probably 10 or 11 steps through the 12-step process.
You're a recovering lawyer.
A recovering lawyer. Had a strong interest in public policy. Actually was a regulator earlier in my career. What I love about the people in this industry, natural gas, we're a gas company as well as an electric company, and electric both, people in this industry, regardless of position, whether they're in a truck or in an executive office, are so dedicated to public service, so dedicated to doing the right things for their customers and communities. It's extraordinary, and it's a hard thing to understand from the outside.
Bob, is that because electricity is good for people?
People
are affected by the fact they're actually doing something useful?
Absolutely, and as I mentioned, the Department of Homeland Security recognizes what people in this industry do as unique among all critical infrastructures, because every other critical infrastructure platform depends on the people in this industry doing their jobs as very best they possibly can.
Well, in warfare, we've found the thing to do nowadays is take out the power plant, and half the battle is won, so to speak.
Very
Bob,
true.
It's a joy to talk to you.
It's
Thank
a delight.
You so
it's
much.
An honor. Thank you.
Thank you. A short pause for station identification, primarily for our listeners on Sirius XM Radio, channel 124, the POTUS channel. This is White House Chronicle. I am Llewellyn King, and we're coming to you today from the Edison Electric Institute annual meeting in New Orleans, Louisiana. This program can be seen around the world on the English language stations of the Voice of America and on 200 select American television screens. Brian Wolf is Executive Vice President of the Edison Electric Institute. He has a career that started in Washington, not his career, but in Washington, working in the U.S. Senate. And now he is the chief political officer. Would that be a reasonable description?
I would call it policy officer.
At the Edison Electric Institute. Yes. Welcome to the broadcast. Very fine convention you've had here.
Thanks.
A lot of new ideas, movement. An industry that was static is now quite mobile. Right. What's going on?
I think you're exactly right, Llewellyn. I think that what you're seeing here at the convention is really the convergence of the demonstration of what we've talked about, which is the industry is clearly in a state of transformation. And I think that you can see that here. A lot of the companies that you see and the technology that you see and the demonstrations that you see at this convention are really about the people that we're currently partnering with. So I think that's a real demonstration of our commitment to innovation, clearly our commitment to answering what the customer is really wanting and what they're wanting to see with regards to electricity use and also what they're seeing at home. You know, it's not anymore about just the environmental challenges that we face as an industry. It's really now more about choice. And what we're seeing is customer really, they really want to see technology innovation available to them.
Explain the choice. And when I turn on my light switch, as everybody does, I don't feel I have a lot of choice.
Right.
I don't have a lot of complaint either.
Right.
But I don't have a lot of choice. How does the customer have choice in the setup we
have? The transformation that I just mentioned, if we think about the history of it all, you know, electricity was flowing one way, right? We were flowing one way and we were communicating with our customers one way. That's once a month. Okay. Now we're seeing energy, electricity flow in two directions. Okay. So what we're actually experiencing now, which is the increased investment that we have, almost $35 billion in 2014 alone on the distribution side of the grid. So we're seeing grid modernization. We're seeing actual smart grid applications with regards to technology. And we're seeing customer-enabled technology, you know, being able to flow across the grid.
So with the data, the customer is more empowered in how they use electricity.
That's right.
There's a company called Opar that is quite important.
Sure.
I happen to have found our bill that shows how much electricity I use compared to my neighbors.
Right.
And which is quite an incentive to use less, actually.
Absolutely.
Because you get rather sort of competitive with the Joneses.
Absolutely. I get the same thing. And, you know, I always like to see where I am. Am I good? Am I very good? You know, where do I fall in with my neighbors? I think the behavioral aspects of what we're seeing with regards to technology, whether it's handheld technology or it's in-home energy management, I think what we're actually seeing is behavioral aspects of changing, you know, and I think that technology is really bringing about what customers want to see.
What are we going to see down the road? What are we going to see in 5-10 years? Are we going to see the companies we have today, the structure we have today, or are we going to see them broken into lesser units or larger units?
Well, I think that a little bit of both. I think that what you're seeing here and the companies you see demonstrating here, that really these technology companies, energy technologies that have energy technologies that we're looking for, they're really our partners for tomorrow. You know, so what we're looking to do is be able to shape what is exactly a comprehensive energy solution for our customer. The environmental rules that we're currently seeing coming out with the carbon rules that we'll see, the decarbonization of our society and certainly of our industry, we represent about 38% of all of the economy-wide emissions with regard to carbon. You'll see that in the culmination of those with technology, you know, will be about enabling energy efficiency, you know, demand response in your home. You know, we'll be able to see those really come to fruition because some companies may choose, hey, we're not going to build that additional, you know, plant. What we're going to do is be able to communicate with our customers to be able to use less energy. So therefore, they might be able to produce or generate less energy or buy less energy for the home. So that really is going to be the future of where we see the industry.
Briefly, is the cost of electricity going to go up, remain constant, or decline?
Llewellyn, that's a big question. If you look, though, if you think about right now today, we spend 1.5% of your personal household consumption is on electricity. 1.5%. That hasn't changed since 1959. Okay, so if you look at the transformation we're going through, we have to be thoughtful about how we do that. If you look at other countries, particularly in Europe, you could look at other developed countries that are currently living in energy poverty because their average bill is about $350 per household. Can you imagine? So I think the transformation has to be thoughtful. You know, we have to think about what we're going to look like in the future, whether it's a decarbonized, you know, economy and society, what we're going to look like as far as technology and innovation. So we have to be able to chart that out because if you look at the entire regulated utility business model, which is integrated, it works simply because we're able to prioritize what is best for the customer to be able to have affordable, reliable, and increasingly clean electricity.
What is the role of the federal government here?
But the role of the federal government is clearly going to be about what is it going to be to ease that cost for customers, because you're passing along those costs directly to the household. So where we could sort of work with them on federal policy, you know, the environmental rules will roughly be behind us as far as the Clean Air Act. What we're really going to be looking at is infrastructure, energy infrastructure. How do we get energy from point A to point B, whether it be overall transmission, distribution of gas distribution system, you know, whether it is working with how do we deal with variable resources like wind and solar on our systems, you know, how do we deal with the overall issue of power quality? Look at what Hawaii is dealing with. You know, you could plug in something into a socket in Hawaii that could really be an issue for your devices. They could burn up just by nature of the surges in power that they're seeing from the variability of resources. That's where we could deal with real constructive, you know, thoughtful and factual.
There are no big issues on Capitol Hill for utilities at the moment. The last one, I think, was the dividend,
right,
which the industry essentially prevailed in.
Right. We're currently in the middle of both Chairman Upton and Chairman Murkowski in the House and Senate have large energy bills in front of their committee. I imagine they're going to push energy legislation this year. We have it with regards to energy infrastructure, workforce issues, you know, issues that we support as an industry. It's acknowledgement of the fact that it can take years to be able to have get a transmission project off the ground. You know, we no longer have the ability to wait 9 to 13 years on average for a transmission line to be built in this country. So we really, because of the changing nature of our electricity business, we need to also have that reflected in what the current needs are. And I do believe the DOE's quadrennial energy review, I think it did a good job at outlining some of those, but I think that Chairman Upton and Chairman Murkowski have it right in the priorities that they're going forward with right
now. So to sum up, you might say that these disruptive technologies, the green technologies, in fact, are being embraced rather than resisted by the established utilities?
I'm so happy that you brought that up because, you know, if you think about it, Thomas Edison was the original disruptor, okay? He and Harvey Firestone, if you remember, and John Burroughs, those guys went on camping trips for 10 years. They went on camping trips and they went and talked about innovation and what they saw happening in this country and the direction that this country would be going in. And I think that when you talk about the original disruptor of Thomas Edison, I think the one thing that we can't afford is to have a sense of disruptive complacency. You know, we have to be able to, just like any other industry, we need to go out and be able to embrace that change, you know, acknowledge we're in the middle of a transformation, and then be able to see where we need to be in the future and chart that path. And I think we're doing that as an industry.
Like most people, I mean, if you talk to sort of an average person, DC AC is not clear what those are.
That's a rock group.
Yeah, AC/DC is a rock group, exactly.
That concludes our special coverage of the Edison Electric Institute convention in New Orleans. Until next time, keep the lights on. Cheers. We'll be right back.